All right. Thank you, young ladies. What a good message and good job. Sister Kelly Stanick's class of girls, she's doing a good job with the college girls, and we've got a great bunch of kids, young ladies this year, and all I knew was they said, be ready to go from your office at 1 o'clock. Some of the college is coming by to get you, and so they did. They pulled up a big long limousine out there. Sonia and I and Stephen and Paula got in it. They chauffeured us down to the college. And there on the steps in front of the building was the college students out there, and especially the girls group. And they were all dressed up, white blouses and dark skirts, and just beautiful scene, and welcomed us and brought us in. And they had a table set like we were really somebody. Served us food and had a live music going, instruments the whole time, the group over there. And then they had the larger group not only serving us, but singing to us. I won't tell you what, I felt like I was finally getting the respect I deserved. No, I honestly felt, well, just a wonderful thing that did that. And we appreciate it so very, very much. I know some of them were making some pictures, and I hope maybe you'll get to see them on the screen when Sister Lee or somebody gets them processed. But they just did a great, great job for us. And we appreciate it. Just really was good. Well, tonight I'm going to be kind of light and shallow, but that'll fit most of us. Amen. Open your Bibles to the book of Psalms. We're going to ask you to go to Psalms 14 and Psalms 53. Don't get afraid. We're only going to read one or two verses in each one of them. And like I say, going to do a little bit shallow tonight. I was talking to a brother, Layman Glass, this morning. He and I were talking on some subjects, and I got to thinking about it some the rest of the afternoon, and so I just thought I'd deal with this just a little bit tonight. Psalms 14, verse 1. The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none that doeth good. Now, go over to Psalms 53 and verse 1 and find pretty well a repeat here. Psalms 53, verse 1. I hope you'd mark these because you might need them sometime. The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. Corrupt are they, and have done abominable iniquity. There is none that doeth good. Now the word works is changed to the word iniquity, which tells you what kind of bad works they were doing. It describes them here. You know, there's only two times in the Bible that the atheist is mentioned. I just read those two. Only two places. The Bible never one time ever tries to prove the existence of God. It just assumes that everyone would know that. And the only time it says that somebody doesn't know it, it calls them a fool. That's interesting, isn't it? I want to say to you that a few reasons tonight I'll give you on why does God call the atheist a fool. Now remember, it's one thing for some human being to call another human being a fool, but when God calls you a fool, the one that made you, knows all about you, and knows what you're thinking, he calls you a fool. That's pretty big. And you got to watch out because this day and time, as we look at the rest of the verse here, it talks about their abominable works, iniquity, it's sin. We're hearing a lot about that today. Boy, I mean, the atheist groups are getting more attention They are moving in. They're trying to stop city commission meetings and town halls from opening up in prayer. In fact, the case, I guess, with Greece, New York, is about to go to the Supreme Court. And they're going to hear whether or not it is legal. Now, courts have ruled before that it was all right and all that, but they won't quit. They just keep popping up and doing this and doing this. And they're trying to stop every prayer in the public square that they possibly can. They're trying to stop any mention of any kind of, quote, Christian holiday, even though it might have had a beginning in paganism. I'm glad the whole world still recognizes Christmas in the sense that the word Christ is involved in the story of the birth and so forth. But with all of that, there's a big attack everywhere you look. And look at their works. They're just trying to stop the military from even having, so help me God, in an oath. The homosexual agenda is promoted by them to the nth degree. And by the way, this little election thing they had last night in several states up in New Jersey and New York, they also slipped a bill in there that is a bill against any kind of discrimination in employment or on the job. Now let me tell you what that means. Ah, don't bother us. Yes, it will. I'd say to any of our staff here, if you're interviewing anybody for a job, you better be real careful. If they lie to you or whatever else and tell you all their qualifications, and then you find out they're not even a Christian, that they're homosexual, and you tell them no, we'll probably have to go to court over that. That's what it means. That's what it means. That's the craziest time that we've come to. Their promotion of such things as abortion and all of that is well known. So when the Bible describes them here as having abominable works, man, it's telling what we are seeing and reading in the newspaper and knowing about today, just everywhere you look. Now, why would God call them a fool? I was thinking about this. Some real reasons. To begin with, an atheist has a moral bankruptcy. He is morally bankrupt. Say, what do you mean? I mean this. He has no foundation for morality. He has no foundation for any right or wrong. See, he doesn't believe in any absolutes. Now, here's the thing. He would not admit it, but if he says murder is wrong, where'd he get that? Come from what God says. And if you do not believe there's a God and that God hadn't put his word down to us, you don't believe in that, then you know, who's to say what's right and wrong? Who's to say murder is wrong? See, there's no foundation. There's nothing to build on there. And so even the atheist, he's real glad as he walks down the street that everybody else is not moral bankrupt, or his life wouldn't be worth much. You see, it's sort of like the abortion crowd. I believe in abortion, yeah, but you're glad you were not one of the stats. See? And that's the way that thing really plays out with this thing of moral bankruptcy on the part of the so-called atheist. Now, truthfully, you know and I know that there's no such thing as an atheist. He's trying to convince himself. He's trying to put up argument to satisfy that little tiny voice that's still inside that says there may be a God to face. What his real fear is. But to have no absolutes, think about it. Something is absolutely right or wrong. On what basis? On the basis of God's word, on the basis of what God says, on the basis of what God has placed within us. And if you don't have that, who's to say that it's wrong to rob the bank and steal somebody else's money? So you have no absolute at all. I think about a story I know of a young man that was working for a company, store, I'll call it. That was something a little more than that. But how they come down to going to have a weekend to do inventory. I think that was the excuse. And the boss man told them they all would have to work Saturday and Sunday. And the young man told him, said, sir, I can't work Sunday. I've got my obligations at church. I got a Sunday school class. I got this, that. Now I can't work on Sunday. He said, you will or you'll get fired. And the young man said, well, I'm sorry, I can't. So he got fired. Little time went on, and the banker came to see the businessman that had fired the young man. He came to see him, and he said, so-and-so used to work for you. He said, yeah, he worked for me a few weeks ago, and I let him go. He said, he's applied at the bank for a job, and I wanted to come see why you dismissed him and what you'd think, because I was looking to see if I could get a recommendation for him. Would it be safe to hire him? And the businessman said, oh yes, hire that young man. Get him if you can. That's the kind of man you need working at your bank. He said, but I thought you fired him. He said, I did fire him. I fired him because he wouldn't do what I told him to do, but he said, I secretly admired him that he stuck by his convictions and would not deny his Christian faith. He said, that's the kind of man I'd like for you to have at the bank. Said, you can trust him. He said, see, he is concerned more about what somebody else thinks about what he does than just his paycheck. And that was the man that fired him. I don't see Brother Perkins out there. He's probably somewhere tonight. But he was telling me here not long ago in one of the nursing homes, therapy homes somewhere. He's had some good ministries in there. He was telling me, he said, you know what? I ran across a man that knew you. And he said he was getting pretty feeble, but said he knew you. In fact, he said he used to be your boss. And I found out who he was. And I said, yeah, that's right. And he said, I go in there and I give him the gospel and I preach to him. And he said, that fellow told me more than one time, said, you sound just like Mickey Carter. And here's the story. I did go to work for that guy. I'd been saved a few years, certainly a long time before I went to Bible college. But I went to work for him. And when I went to work for him, and of course it was a place where you'd be handling some of their money on a route and stuff like this. And so, you know, we call it vetting now. Then you just looked into your background and your reputation. But in so doing and having that interview with him, I told him I was saved, I was born again, I was a Christian, I taught a Sunday school class, I gave him my Christian testimony. I found out that he went to a church, so-called, with his wife once in a while, but he really wasn't a Christian. And so we talked a little bit about it. Well, after I'd been working for him, biggest part of a year, 6 months to a year for sure, he called me in one day and he said, you know, we need to hire a couple of more men. He said, I want to know if there's a couple of more men in your church like you. Now, he wasn't in church, but he wanted to hire somebody that he could trust, that wouldn't be stealing from him, wouldn't be out doing wrong. You see, even the world recognizes somebody that's got some absolutes, somebody that's got a foundation, somebody that has got somebody else they're trying to please instead of just grabbing all they can for themselves. But the atheist is, he's morally bankrupt. That's all there is to it. And I want to say this, when you have somebody that don't believe in God, that's not a good risk. You hire him, can you trust him? Well, why? You say, well, it's wrong to steal, but he don't think it's wrong to steal because stealing, being wrong, come from God. But he don't believe in God. See, that's situation ethics. That's whatever I want to do. Well, you say, well, he wants to, he's got morals. He wants to be treated well himself, and he wants others to treat him like he would treat them. Well, where'd he get that? Yeah. Did you ever hear the golden rule? Yeah. Isn't that a Bible basis truth? Sure it is. And somebody that don't believe in God's dangerous to have around your loved ones, your kids. Oh yeah, I mean, they have no fences, they have no boundaries, they have no restraints, they have no right and wrong if they don't believe there's a God, and a God that says what's right and what's wrong. I hate to say it, but we're seeing now promoted all over the TV, in school curriculums and other ways to dodge God every way possible. And as we kick the Bible and prayer out of schools, well, now we got to have policemen and screening machines and everything else, because all of a sudden there's no policeman in the sky. There's no policeman in the heart. There's no restrainer. There's no God to answer to. And that's exactly the philosophy that's got our country in such a big mess and getting worse all the time, all the time. Now, God calls him a fool, though. Calls him a fool because he's morally bankrupt, and also because he denies his own inner witness in his heart. Amen. Jeremiah said the law of God's written on our heart with a pen of iron with a diamond point. I tell you the truth, even people that aren't Christians, in fact, have not received Christ, they still know the law in their heart. When the thief steals, there's something inside tells him it's wrong. When he commits adultery, there's something inside says, thou shalt not commit adultery. There's the law of God written on the heart. And it's very, very real. Inner witness. I remembered today, and I even remembered the man's name. He was the son of my college president when I was in Bible college. How many of you remember? Do you remember when it became the fashion and the newspapers was talking about it and the fellow was on TV, when a college or university professor, I forget what so-called Ivy League school he was with, but he came out with a theory and it went all around the world that God is dead. Remember that one? How many of you remember that? That's quite a few hands. Remember that. God is dead. Well, boy, the liberal media jumped on that. They put him on talk shows. They had him on the news. They had articles about him in the newspaper. He went around on a lecture tour. He had hit this theme, God is dead. And his whole theme, basically, was the idea of God is dead. There never was a God to start with. And that's what he went around preaching, and it is preaching. It's just the devil's preaching instead of God's. It is preaching. And he got a lot of hearing on it. College students. It's the most amazing thing. The group of people that think they're the smartest in the world are the dumbest. Isn't that amazing? Any new fad grabs them. If they just take a look back at their own young people coming up behind them, they all went through a bunch of crazy fads. And I don't have a whole lot of assurance about somebody who's young, healthy, with a full tummy and a full billfold, even if Dad put it there. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in them when they say there is no God, when they say I don't need God. Let them get old and sick and the doctor shake his head and the pain is something they can't get rid of. Now tell me you don't believe in God. That's a whole different ball game. That's why we used to say no atheists in the foxhole. And you let a guy get scared enough in enough danger, have enough crisis in his life, he'll go back to what's on the inside. And that is that he's got a creator to face. God is dead is what this fellow taught and preached. And I know the guy, I haven't seen him for many years, but he was my president's of the college. It was his son. First name was George. I could give you his whole name, but his name was George. George wanted to be a chaplain in the military, and he had to take some courses and graduate with these degrees to fit the bureaucratic pattern to get into the military as a chaplain. So he was in this particular college in a chapel type service, similar service, when the man came to deliver his speech about God is dead. And so he sat there with a big body of student body and heard this guy lecture on God is dead. But he made a mistake near the end of his message because he opened it up to the college students for questions and answers. Now, while most of the student body was intimidated, George had a Bible-believing background, raised in a Christian family. And so he said after one or two nothing type questions was asked, he said, I was fairly close to the front, and I stood up, raised my hand, and this professor that said God is dead recognized me, walked over the edge of the platform and said, yes, young man, what's your question? He said, "Sir, you've been talking about intellectual honesty." And he said, "I want to ask you a personal question. We've all heard what you had to say. We've heard your lecture. But in intellectual honesty, deep in your heart, deep within you, are you satisfied with what you just told us? Do you have peace about it?" And he said it got real quiet in the auditorium. He said the professor stood there and looked at him a while and finally said, "In all honesty, young man, I'm not satisfied with it." You see, the truth is, inside, what he was saying, trying to convince himself, he knew it wasn't real. I've told you many times about the college professors, math department in Russia, when they got saved after a simple gospel presentation where the man gave the testimony, "We taught atheism, all of us did, but all the time we knew it wasn't true." And that's the witness inside of everybody. So God calls him a fool because he denies his own inner witness. And you want to know why men study to deny God? Turn right over to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 18. And I just read a verse or two, and I want you have to analyze this a little bit and think about it. Do you know that it's big business to study and write books and do lectures against God? The atheist clubs today are growing, and they've got into politics now to where the political liberals are backing them because they see us conservative Bible believers as being a threat to their holding office and a threat to cutting off their so-called funds or robbery of the tax money. Anyway, Proverbs 18, verse 1. "Through desire, a man having separated himself seeketh and intermeddleth with all wisdom." Now here's a guy separating himself to seek and intermeddle with all wisdom. Watch it now, verse 2. "A fool hath no delight in understanding, but that his heart may discover itself." You know what happened to that professor when George asked him that question? His heart told the truth on it. His heart says, "I'm going to reveal what I feel." So here's why a man works and studies. And this is amazing. Isn't this amazing that a man will give his life to attack somebody that he says don't exist? You ever think about that? That's pretty crazy, isn't it? I'll give my earthly life to fight against somebody that don't exist. You can't get much bigger fool than that. No wonder God calls him a fool. "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God." Well, what I'm saying this verse says is that the heart discovers itself because they're studying and working and trying and writing and lecturing to make an alibi for themselves to do what they wanted to do to start with. You see, I've told you before, old Bob Ingersoll, the infamous atheist of years ago, colonel, I believe, in the Army, he'd lecture on a soapbox in New York and other places, and in some high places, that there was no God. There was no God. Bob Ingersoll. I had a Sunday school teacher one time in my intermediate Sunday school department. Long time before I went in the ministry, she lived very close to Bob Ingersoll, the famous or infamous atheist. She said, "I lived close enough to him to see what an ungodly life he lived." You see, that's what the verse is saying. He wants to make an alibi. He wants to justify. He wants to find a way to convince himself that he don't have a God to answer to. Anyway, he's denying his inner witness of himself there. God calls him a fool. He's a fool because his so-called faith forsakes him on his deathbed. You read the stories about fellows like Voltaire. Cried out on his deathbed after he wrote, and he's quoted by college universities still. I had a girl in my church in the country. after she left there and went to college, and she came back Christmas time, and I was talking to her. She was going to have to do a paper, and guess who she was going to have to speak well of in that paper was Voltaire, the French atheist. Nobody wanted her to tell how he died. He died in his own filth in a bed where a nurse said she'd never attend another atheist, because he was crying out, "I am abandoned of both God and man. I shall go to hell." He even called some preachers in to see him, and when they got in the door, the devil in him hollered and run them out. They said it was an awful scene, that he was hanging between death and life and death, and crying out against God with one breath, and then on the other hand begging God to save him in the other. Said it was an awful thing to see. A lot of difference. Joe John Wesley, the old time preacher, that turn over in his grave if he saw what his church has become today. But anyway, John Wesley said, "Our people die well." There is a difference in the way a Christian dies in faith and one that dies fearing to face God. Boy, there's a difference. And I've seen them both in my ministry. Boy, what a big difference there is. But he's a fool, God says. He's a fool because that so-called faith will forsake him. I've told you about Anthony Flew here a few years back, the leading atheist in London. I guess he's probably dead by now. He was up in his 80s then. Had a big following. He was the champion. And all of a sudden, the headline of the paper come out and said, "Anthony Flew says there's a God." Boy, did that disturb his following. It was in the paper quite a bit there for a while. And they went to him and said, "No, he must be out of his head. He must be senile. He must have dementia." No. He told that following crowd of atheists, he said, "All I did was follow the evidence." And he was talking about the evidence of DNA. Hey, you got to understand something. When every snowflake is not the same, when every man's DNA is a programmed for that individual and nobody else, that is the most unbelievable. I mean, that's more than having a watch and not believing in a watchmaker. I mean, there had to be more than intelligence. There had to be God, supernatural, able to do that. So many things you see. Romans chapter 1, if you want to look at it there, you know it, but it covers this thing. Talking about the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Men, it's not the truth is hard to find. They don't want to find it. They don't want to recognize it. They want to hold it in unrighteousness. Verse 19, because that which may be known of God is manifest, open, manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. Now, how did he show it to them? Here it is, verse 20. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead. Watch the last line. So that they are without excuse. Stand at the judgment of God and say, "God, I didn't know you exist." He's going to say, "How about that tree? How you think it made itself? How about the animal kingdom I sustained, took care of the needs? I mean, how about the sun, the moon, the stars, the earth with just the right mixture of elements for man to live?" And you said you couldn't figure out there had to be an intelligent mind behind that? A creator behind that? You talk about something not holding up at the judgment. That's going to be it, brother. Romans 1 says the invisible things are clearly seen, that they're without excuse. I settled there had to be a God when I was in the third grade from doing nothing but looking at his creation. I'd heard about Santa Claus and got disappointed in what I'd learned about him. Sorry, but figure that out, some of you. And Christmas getting close and bust your bubble. But I'd also heard about God from the same people, and I had to come to a time to make up my mind God was real, whether Santa Claus was or not. And I'm amazed that the folks today believe in Santa Claus in Washington, but not God in heaven. And that's what you see going on today. But think about it just a minute here. Romans 1, the creation. You see the instinct in animals? Most amazing thing. Somebody says, well, that's just nature. No, it's God-given knowledge that he's placed in them. I read a long time ago about a little old bird. It's called a golden plover, up in Alaska somewhere, up somewhere in the snow. And how that bird would make a round trip flying well over 1,000 miles south and go back to the same place. But now watch this. That one bird made that one trip. Of course, there's many of them, but I'm using one for an example. That bird got married. And he and his wife had a family while they're still up north in the cold. That family hatches out, the parents die off. The family's never made that 1,000-mile trip before, but they make it and go to the same place and return back. Now, you can call that science or biology or whatever you want to. It's God. God put instinct in animals. And if you've been a country boy much as I have, you see some things. They'll tell you it had to come programmed, pre-programmed, if you please. And so much in the witness of God's creation. God calls an atheist a fool for so many reasons. One is he goes against pure old common sense and reasoning. The result of a fool is what he loses. And you remember in Luke 12, the fellow that had to build bigger barns because his crops brought forth so much. You remember how he spoke to his soul? Remember how he said, soul, take thine ease. Thou hast many goods laid up. And remember what God said to him? Thou fool, this night shall thy soul be required of thee. So the end result of where he ends up makes him a fool. I've often preached this. Any man that will not take two chances to one qualifies to be a fool. You see, and I have, I've talked to some fellas, and I'm trying to see a face or two right now on this very issue where they told me they were unbelieving, atheists, didn't believe it, and all their little arguments. And I remember one in particular, I said, look, I said, what if you're wrong? He says, what if you're wrong? I said, okay, let's play the game for a minute. If you're right, the body is going to die. That's all there is to it. There's no life on the other side. You're going to go back to dust like a rotten limb that fell off of a tree. Yeah, that's right. Never know nothing else. I said, well, then if you're right, I haven't lost anything. I just died and go to dust with you. But I said, suppose I'm right. I said, sounds to me like a fool. It wouldn't take two chances to one. You see, if I'm right, you're in a heap of trouble. If you're right, I've just enjoyed believing I was going to heaven. Enjoyed the trip. He said, well, you had to give up some things. You know, you don't smoke, you don't drink, you don't run around. I said, yeah, I gave up some things. I gave up possibility of catching venereal disease. I gave up maybe lung cancer or maybe having a pickled liver. I said, so the end of my trip is heaven, and if you're right and I'm wrong, I've still enjoyed living a clean life and having the respect of my neighbors and my folks and my family. Do you understand what I'm saying? Let me illustrate it for you here a minute. This is a cheap illustration. It's a shallow illustration. I know who I'm preaching to tonight, amen? That's a little old volleyball. I don't think it's the right size, whatever it is. But I want to play a little game. Jesse, catch this, please. Can you catch the ball? All right, good, good. Hold it for me. This is a wastebasket out of my office, but it'll serve as a goal right now. Let's see. Put it right over here. Now, Jesse, I got $5 in my pocket. If you can throw the ball from where you're at and put it in the basket. How many chances would you like to do that? You're pretty close. Is one good enough? You sure? Just one? One's all you want? Daniel, stand up. Both of you stand up right here. Daniel, would you like to play the same game? All right, how many chances would you like? One or two? Are you sure you'd just take one? I need some intelligent help. Nathan, come over here and stand with these guys. Now remember, $5. I'm gonna give you one or two chances. Which one would you rather have, Nathan? Duh. Nathan says he wants two. Now, Jesse, you realize that you could miss. Something could happen between the ball and here, even though you're close. Daniel, you realize that too? But both of y'all want one chance. All right, shoot it. Shoot it, Jesse. Shoot it. Try to put it in there. One chance. Anything could happen. Shoot it. Didn't I tell him anything could happen? Let Daniel have a try. One chance only. One chance. I didn't even have to move the basket. Now come back with me. I'd already spoken ahead of time to Jesse. I can't explain Daniel. I'd already spoken ahead of time and told him to only take one, because neither one of these guys are fools. And it would take a fool to choose one chance when he could have two. Let me see you. I'll give you your chance. Go ahead. Now he's got two tries. All right, go ahead. He blew my illustration. He ought to put it in at that distance. You gonna dunk it? All right. Thank you, man. Now, soul winners, listen to me. Listen to me, seriously. Don't forget that. See, a picture's worth a thousand words. Don't forget. We'd call anybody a fool that wouldn't take two chances to one to win anything. By the way, I saved $5, none of them. But isn't that logical, reasonable? No wonder God called the atheist a fool. The fool have said in his heart, there's no God. Just don't add up, does it? And yet, they are the intellectuals, and we're the dum-dums. Oh, no. Let the last breath be sucked in. Wait till the trumpet sounds as our doctor says he's dead. Then who's the fool? When I was in high school, we had to read the literature, Shakespeare and all that stuff, and probably you remember this. Medieval times, a king, and you know they didn't have TV and stuff then, so they had comedians come in, and they had to have live acts and plays to entertain the king. And almost every king's court had a man that they called the jester, and you've seen pictures of him with a long pointed hat and a clown type suit. You've seen all that. And they called him the jester, They called him the fool. But he would come in and entertain royalty. In this particular story I was reading, this jester came in and performed for the king. And then the king, after a while, had gotten sick and was finally pretty well hurting, and the clown came in and performed for him to make him feel better and laugh. And the king enjoyed it. When the jester started to leave, he gave him a colorful stick, walking cane, we'd say. And he said to him, he said, "Now, you're the best fool, funniest fool I've ever had, and I'm giving you this stick. And if you ever find a bigger fool than you, give it to him." Well, some time went by, and the king got right down close to death. And they called for the jester to come in again. And he came in, and of course, it couldn't do much to entertain a dying king, but finally he came to the king and spoke to him. And he said, "Sir, are you prepared for what awaits you on the other side?" And the king said, "No, no, no, never have." The jester said, "Sir, you gave me this stick, and you told me if I could ever find a bigger fool than me to give it to him, so I'm giving it back to you." Pretty good point. Pretty good point. With all you're seeing in the news today and everything else, don't be intimidated. You got the truth. And God calls you.